And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 127. My name is Tom Harris from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, and we are back after having a week off. I could only wish that it was actually a week off. Well, a week off from recording the show anyway. Unfortunately, it was one of those weeks where real life intervened into the podcasting production schedule in a real big way. And it became obvious really, really quickly that I was not going to be able to get a show out last week. So I do apologize. You know me, I like to be productive and I like to have a show each and every week, but sometimes it's just not possible. All right, so we have a couple of things I'd like to cover before we cover the issue for this episode. First of all, 2 weeks from now, episode number 129, we are going to talk about Thor: The Dark World. It is going to be my review, lots of spoilers, lots of everything. We're going to give it all away. So if you'd like to participate in that episode, I would really appreciate it if you could send me emails. I would read these emails out on the show, and the email address that you can send them to is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. Now, if this is anything like my other calls for emails, we're not going to get very many, but I really do want to hear what people have to say about Thor 2. I definitely have my own thoughts about it, generally speaking, positive thoughts. I think that it was a pretty good movie, but I do have little nitpicks as well, and maybe some not so little nitpicks. But we are going to talk about that 2 episodes from now, and I would love to hear from you. Now, if you don't want to send an email, you can actually send a voice file, and I'd be happy to play those out on the show as well. Don't feel restricted to any particular genre of communication, because we do like it all. Would love to hear your input into what you thought about Thor: The Dark World. Okay, so speaking of the Facebook group, which we weren't doing, how do you like that for a segue? Yeah, the last couple of episodes, I've commented that we've had a lot of people join the Facebook group recently, and I just wanted to run down a list very briefly of those who joined over the past few weeks, because it's very gratifying to see new people joining. I really, really appreciate it, folks. Now, we do have a number of the Two True Freaks guys who've joined recently, and a lot of that had to do, I think, with the Back to the Bins episode that I recorded with them a couple of weeks ago, and which is now available. If you go over to TrueTrueFreaks.com, you can hear the episode of Back to the Bins regarding Thor and hear me in all my unedited glory. I'm a firm believer in the heavy hand of editing to get out all the and-ums and but-ums, but you can hear what I actually sound like over there. I think editing adds at least 10 points to my IQ. Anyway, in no particular order, here's the few people who have joined the Facebook group recently. They are Paul Spataro, Scott Gardner, J. David Weeder, Brady Tully, Gio Blanco, Chris Warden, Professor Alan Middleton, Jason Ritter, Robert Pels, returning to us for the third time, and Stephen J. Rogers. Now, I suppose this is where we need to insert the obligatory Captain America joke, so consider that having been made. But seriously, folks, it is great to have everybody along in the Facebook group, and I hope you enjoy it there. All right, so without any further ado, we have another long issue this time, so let's go ahead and move along to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
So this week we are covering the third and final issue of Thor: Godstorm. Cover date is January of 2001, retailed for $3.50. Cover art is by Steve Rude and shows the evil Loki towering over the mighty Thor, who is standing on what looks like the remains of a ruined oil rig. I think we know what happens here. And Loki is holding a bunch of bodies in his one hand, looking, well, they're looking like they're pretty smashed. And in the other hand, he's holding a fishing boat. There's people falling out of the fishing boat. And behind Loki is ominous dark clouds with eyes, and they're all looking very dreary. And Thor's whirling his hammer around, and it looks all looks very exciting. We open up to the credits page where we have the same credits basically as last time. Kurt Busiek was the writer. Steve Rood was the penciler, inked by Mike Royer. Greg Wright was the colorist. John Costanza was the letterer. Comic Craft did the design for this. Mark Sumerak was the assistant editor. Tom Brevoort was the editor. Joe Quesada was the editor-in-chief. And Bill Gemas was the president. We open up to the splash page. It says, The Tale of the Mighty Thor and Rumble Crack, The Promise That Was Kept. At least it wasn't the old man who was speaking the title again. So we have this image of dark clouds, and then we have lightning striking. And it looks like that there's the old man from the prior two issues, and he has his staff in hand, and he's inside a cave, and we see that there's a thunderstorm going outside the cave. And inside the cave with him are the two boys, Wilf and Uller. If you remember, Wilf is the blonde Thor-like one, and Uller is the dark-haired Loki-like one. And Uller is saying,
Does he mean to stand there all day? After all, he did promise to tell us the rest of the story tonight, to tell us what happened to Thor in the Godstorm. Or what will happen, at least, if that Talestone truly reveals what happens more than 1,000 years hence, as he said. Of course it does, Uller. Look at it. Look at what he showed us of it yesterday. Why do you doubt it? Tell me this, then, Wilf. Who carved it? How did it come to be here? It just is, that's all. Aye, as these glowing carvings just are, I warrant. We've roamed these hills since he could walk, Wilf. And we never found this cave before, I know. But that makes me believe it all the more. Were it some low prank, how could the cave, the Talestone, just appear? Still, I wonder, had we come another night, or with another question to ask, would the stone have shown a different story?
And the old man shows up looking very Mike Mignola-ish here in this picture.
And how could it, Fingerlings? It is cold, lifeless stone. You think it chooses what to be?
No, but enough. We must resume our tale. See at the top of the Talestone, see what we have learned thus far.
And we get a little bit of recap here from last issue.
We did see a young man of western lands come to these shores, and saw that he was the thunder god in human form. And we did see his path cross with that of two troubled northmen, the sea-farming Batina and her brother Brom, who held a talisman. The chip of Thor's hammer given in gratitude to his ancestor long, long ago. But the circle was not yet complete, for the gift stone had been presented to a brave Viking for aiding the Thunderer, aiding him when scheming Loki had twisted the spear of the most powerful of the storms that rage in our skies. The Godstorm had been defeated, however, and trapped beneath the sea floor.
And we see images, of course, of Jake Olsen arriving in Norway. And we have Bettina, who is wearing some sort of, it looks like almost a police uniform. No, she's that cruise ship person, right? And Brom, who, of course, is dressed in his oil rig outfit. And we see Loki and Thor facing off in front of the Godstorm. And these are images that I suppose could be being summoned by the old man's staff. But it doesn't look like The kids can see. I mean, it's weird. Storytelling that's not completely effective, in my opinion. The kids, I guess, are remembering what happened to it.
The great machine. The machine on the waters where the man Brom labored. It augured into the sea floor. It was going to break through to free the Godstorm. Did Brom return to the machine in time? Did Thor arrive and prevent the Godstorm's release?
And we then shift scenes to, of course, the present day, where this is happening in real time here. And we're hearing a little bit of the old man's exposition here.
Let us see. No, no, he did not. The lands of the machine broke through to the rock oil, which is the Earth's life's blood. And for a time, the men who drove the machine rejoiced at their good fortune. But their joy did not last long. For in moments,
and we see the whole oil rig exploding with a huge bagoo boom, and pieces of the oil rig flying everywhere, and the people flying everywhere, and everyone's going, ah, and it's like lots of waves and stuff. And we see the form of the god Storm whirling around like a tornado, and he's saying, free! After all the long centuries, all the agony of confinement, I am free! Free to taste the air once more, and free moreover to taste revenge! And we shift scenes again to a very elaborate sort of hotel room. It's just over the top elaborate. I mean, not even in a Kirby-ish way, but more just elaborate for the sake of being elaborate. I've never seen anything looking like this in Norway, I'll have to say. And we have Jake Olsen there, and he's looking out the window, and he's like,
listen to those winds. Howling through the fjords like that, I could almost, wait a minute. I do hear a voice in the winds, and somehow I can feel it. It's connected with whatever drew me here. Drew me and the mighty Thor, and he, I guess, bangs his fist on the ground or whatever, changes into the mighty Thor. We see a burst of light coming from the window of this hotel. So in the next scene, we see Thor, and he's flying over the wreckage of the oil rig, and he said, by my father's beard, the devastation. Surely I've come upon the danger that did command my presence. And up ahead, and you see this giant figure rising up out of the water, kind of scooping the men and dropping them back into the ocean. And he's this big, dark-colored, swirly being. And it doesn't look anywhere near as cool as Torrent did last issue. I like the idea of the Torrent looking like living Kirby Crackle. This guy just looked like he just is wearing a striped costume. And he's got big red eyes and mouth and is looking suitably, I don't know. It looks remarkably unstorm-like as far as I'm concerned. It's kind of dumb-looking, actually. He's saying to himself, so humans still infest this land, do they? Of course they do. I remember I saw through a human's eyes as if in a dream. But no matter, they shall perish with the clenching of my new formed hands. And Thor's like, release those mortals at once. Release them unharmed and prepare thyself for battle. And his eyes start to glow with a zzzk. And he's like, prepare, former Lord of Storms. I have done little these long centuries, but think on this moment. Dwell on it. Plan for it. Believe me, Thor. I am prepared. And he attacks Thor with sort of energy, lightning, some sort of thing that's going zzzk all around Thor. Thor's like, ugh. And Thor is falling from the sky into the water. There's these big rocks in the water, which you wouldn't think that an oil rig would be right by big rocks. It just seems to me to be kind of a dumb idea. But Thor's falling. And he's like, he had struck at Mjolnir, used his foul lightnings to rob it of forward motion. I can do naught but fall, and those jagged rocks below, from this height, they could harm even one such as I. Unless I can twist position myself between them, and splash, he lands in the water, and we see Thor underwater with seaweed all around, and we get a little bit of narration here. Once beneath the waves, Thor drove himself further, not seeking light and air, but swimming downward, ever downward, for he had formed a plan, and reaching the sea floor, he made his way to the great upheaval left in the wake of the god Storm's violent escape, and
he starts hurling rocks up, and it takes a lot of strength to throw rocks up through the water without them losing their momentum. But anyway, so he's pelting the god Storm being with these rocks and throwing him back a bit. And the god Storm's like, rocks! The son of Odin seeks to assault me with mere boulders? Well, it looks like it's being pretty effective.
Truly he must have lost his senses since last we met. Surely he cannot expect stone, no matter how much, to harm a being as powerful as... But wait! The stone from the sea floor where I was so long imprisoned, it still holds the power. The magic that kept me confined still causes me pain.
And he's falling back, and Thor is falling back to the water, and it's like...
But if thou thinkest that will be enough to cow me a little easier, thou hast much to learn. Come forth, and I shall begin thine education.
And we shift scenes to Brom and Bettina, and they're driving in an SUV, I guess towards the coast. I assumed that was where they were heading. And it's all stormy out, and it's raining, of course, and it looks like it's dusk, and it looks like they're having a hard time getting her. And Brahma's saying, "Can't reach the rig, not on the landline or the radio phone. Blast it, I knew I should have stayed. If the radio reports are true..." Brahm, the turn! And they end up soon enough in a village, and I guess it's the same village that the kids live in on the coast here. I mean, that would make sense, but they're in the village. And there's a building here with a big sign outside that has a picture of a fish on it. And we see the fishing boats and these oil workers and so forth. The two of them pull up and they see these men standing there. Look, Brahm, it's Dad and his crew. They must have been down at the docks when it happened.
Great, just what I need tonight.
Oh, stop it, Brahm. Maybe they can tell us what they saw. And one of these fishermen is talking to this guy in a yellow raincoat, who I'm assuming at this point is Brahm's father and Bettina's father.
Victor, it's Bettina, and she's got your boy with her.
Of course she does. Why would he be out on that monstrosity of his when he could be safe on land? Never had the belly for a blowout, Brahm.
This is insane. It should have been a routine drill, but it's like we hit a volcano.
You should have known, Brahm.
Has there been any sign of the men? What about sea residue?
None. No one can get near the place in this storm. Even choppers are grounded. In that chop, it'd be suicide. This is your punishment, boy.
Yeah, for abandoning the old ways. I'm taking the boat.
Are you daft, Brahm? You're no sailor. And if you were, you'd know it's hopeless. You could never... Brahm, stop right there.
Can't, Dad. My men are out there. If anyone else is bringing them in, it's up to me.
And he takes the boat and is sailing out towards the oil rig. And then the old man's like...
That crazy fool, he'll kill himself sure and sink my boat. He doesn't have the sense the good Lord gave a...
And Bettina interrupts him.
He's not doing anything you wouldn't do for your crew, Dad, and you know it. Good luck, Brahm, you can do it.
And on watching from the shadows, we have a sinister figure, and he's dressed in a sort of blue trench coat and a trilby hat, and he's kind of... very sinister, and of course it turns out to be none other than the evil Loki. And he's whispering to himself,
"Perfect. This is what I have waited for all these centuries. This is what patience and cunning have wrought. And now while these mortals gawp at what I have set in motion, Loki triumphs."
We then shift back to the Battle of Thor and the God Storm, and Thor is being grabbed by these sort of black tentacly things. Reminds me a little bit of Gore the God Butcher, to be honest. And they're reaching out and they're wrapping around him, and Thor is like,
"What? Shifting thy hands into steely tendrils?"
"Still you fail to understand, Thor. I am not the being you remember. My power has steeped in the stuff of my stony prison for centuries."
Thou wilt not hold me?"
"Just as thou dost combine the sky powers of thy sire with the earth powers of thy dam, so do I root my might in earth and air."
And it looks like Thor is trying to shoot lightning off of his hammer, and it looks like he manages to free himself with lightning, and it starts falling again, and the God Storm is like,
"And it is between those two forces that thou shalt be crushed."
And just at that moment, Brahm arrives in the fishing boat, and we see that the oil rig is still collapsing here, and it's on fire, and there's people floating around in the ocean and kind of grabbing onto whatever wreckage they can find. And some of the guys are hanging onto the wreckage, and it's like,
"It's Brahm. He got a boat through. Brahm, up here. The rig can't last much longer. Hold on, I see you. I've got enough life jackets and inflatables. Enough for everybody on the rig."
Oh my. I don't even want to comment on that.
"Try to make it back to the main platform. I'll tie up near the heli deck. We're getting everybody out. Everyone, you hear?"
Brahm notices the God Storm, and he's like,
"That monster. And is that Thor of the Avengers? It's like the stories Dad told me when I was a kid. The stone ship he gave me. But even he didn't believe those. They couldn't possibly be true."
And Thor manages to free himself, and he whips Mjolnir at the God Storm. Mjolnir is just kind of flying around the God Storm's head and kind of whirling around like a whirlwind, or I'm not sure what it's supposed to be. But apparently he renders this living storm unable to breathe. Do storms have lungs? I don't think so. But anyway, so he's like,
"What? What dost thou do? I cannot breathe, but how can that be?
Thou art a creature of air, Storm. If my hammer vortex creates a vacuum around thee, thou wilt surely fall."
And the Storm grabs Thor by his cape, and he whips him down into the ocean. It's kind of holding him on the ocean bottom.
"No, I will not be subjected to such effrontery. Thou didst seek to suffocate thy better godling. Allow me to return the gesture."
And we get a very Kirby-esque panel here of the Godstorm holding Thor to the ocean floor. And the old man narrating here.
"And such was the speed of the Godstorm's blow that Thor was unable to even take a breath before he was plunged underwater. And though the gods can go without air longer than any mortal, they too can drown. Trapped on the seafloor, his face pressed into the muck, Thor was held in the Godstorm's mighty grasp. Unable to achieve the leverage to break himself free, what air he had inevitably squeezed from his lungs."
And we see up above, Brahm is on the main platform of the oil rig, and he's rescuing all the people. And he's like, "Arnie, it's me. I'm here. Any bones broken?" And this is this black guy that was in the last episode.
"I think I've had ribs in better shape than this, but you get me loose, and I make it to the boat."
And Brahm reaches for the girder, and he lifts the girder off of Arnie. And Arnie's like, "Huh? That girder? You can't possibly..." And Brahm's like, "No, tell me later, Arnie. Just now, move, move." And Brahm grabs a fire extinguisher, and he's shooting, you know, CO2 or whatever on all this fire here. And people are making their way to the boat. They're sensible, and they're not sticking around. Everyone's heading over there.
"Okay, but Brahm, Mikkel went to radio for help. Didn't come back."
And Brahm's like, "Got it. Now go get a life jacket and get to the boat, Arnie. Wait 5 minutes for anyone else, and then go. Get back to land. Don't wait."
And Arnie's going towards the radio room, and he's like,
"Smoke! If Mikkel's trapped there, passed out!"
And he kind of crashes through the door with the fire extinguisher, and he's like,
"Mikkel! Mikkel! You in here? It's Brahm!"
And Mikkel is in there, and he's like, "Brahm!"
"Take like, easy, Mikkel. I got you. You're going to be all right. We hit him. Something big. Shaft buckled. Couldn't hold it. It's okay, Mikkel. It's okay."
And just at that moment, Loki enters the fray. At least he's flying around overhead out in the open now, flying around in his green and yellows, as they say. And he's cackling over the scene that's going on here.
"Ah, what a sight. What a sight to gladden even a god's eye. My hated half-brother, humiliated before me by a power I engineered, a foe whose heart I poisoned. A delicious moment, and almost enough. Almost, but how sweet it will be, how unimaginably sweet, when Loki's is the hand that delivers the final blow."
And we have a full page here of the Godstorm holding Thor at the bottom. And you can see the oil floating in the water, which I like that sense that, you know, they haven't forgotten about that, that there actually was oil down here in this hole that they're drilling towards. Yeah, of course, there's still people hanging onto the wreckage, so not everybody got to the boat, obviously. And Loki is starting to cast a spell of some kind. He's got this green glow around his hands, and he's...
"I call upon all the foul spirits of darkness on my own ages-old spell. Deliver to me that which I desire now!"
And he shoots out this big purple, glowy, kind of misty ray thing with a giant zzzzt. They're very fond of that sound effect in this comic.
"And may my cat's paw rot in Niflheim alongside my brother."
And his ray hits the Godstorm from behind and actually is damaging the Godstorm. He's like,
"Harg! Attack from behind? What madness! Loki, what is the meaning of this assault? We are allies."
"We're allies, fool. Now I have another use for thee."
"Thou art insane, Loki. Mad as a whirlwind. And thou wilt not find me defenseless. Feel the sting of my power."
And the Godstorm shoots this yellow and orange ray thing at Loki. And Loki seems to be soaking up the power. It's it's kind of, he's trying to goad him into doing this, I guess. He's floating in midair and he's absorbing this power. He's like,
"Thy power, trusting one? Alas, no. for I think thou wilt find that what once was thy power now belongs to Loki.
And he's looking all evil and smiley and so forth. And we see that Loki has grown to the same size as the Godstorm. And the Godstorm is still holding Thor in one hand, and Thor is just kind of hanging there. And the Godstorm is like,
"Eh, how can this be? Thou didst appear to me once in giant form, but that was naught but illusion. Now
it is quite real, simpleton. I laid cunning spells on thee long ago, so that all the power thou didst amass could be claimed by me when the time did come. That time now is here, and thy day is over."
And Loki shoots the Godstorm with a glowy explosion of some kind, and the Godstorm's like, "No, no, no!" And the Godstorm is dissipating. And as the Godstorm begins to dissipate, we cut scenes again. We're back in the town on the beach, where we have the old man and Bettina, and they're standing there, and they see the boat arriving through binoculars. And Bettina's like,
"Look, look, your boat, Dad, with men aboard. Brom got them through. Do you see him? Is he there?"
I don't see him.
He's still at the platform, then. He wouldn't leave till everyone was safe."
And the boat arrives, and people are kind of jumping off, and they're like, "We made it. I can't believe it.
How many more of you are still out there?"
"About a dozen, maybe less."
And the old man's like, "And Brom? Where is Brom Anders?" And they have Arnie, the black guy, is like,
"Last I saw, he was trying to get through a fire, reach Willie in the control room. Bravest thing I ever saw. But even if he makes it, the lifeboats are all smashed. There's no way out. I don't think he's coming back."
And the old man's like, "Oh, Brom."
And we shift back to the scene where Thor is now standing on a rock, and he's whirling his hammer around, and Loki is threatening him, the giant Loki, and he says,
"And now, dear brother, I turn to thee. Thou wert helpless against the Godstorm, and will be all the more so against Loki."
And Thor's like, "Do thy worst, Loki. Thou shalt not find me wanting."
"Bah! One storm blast will suffice too."
And he shoots a blast at Thor, but he misses, ends up destroying more of the oil rig with a bacam. And Loki's like,
"Hey, thou dost move more swiftly indeed when fear dogs thy heels. But thou could not even outwit a mass of vapor, cloth head. And now all its powers is at the command of a master sorcerer. Why limit myself to mere hail, for instance, when my skill allows me to do far, far more?"
And he casts a spell, and there's these giant chunks of ice falling from the sky. And Thor's like,
"Odin's beard, icebergs!"
Yeah, I don't think they really understand why where icebergs come from. Anyway, and we shift scenes once again, and we're back on the oil rig, and Brom, and he's carrying Mikkel over his shoulder, and I guess Mikkel is unconscious or something, I guess, anyway. So Brom has managed to lash a few oil barrels together and kind of a makeshift raft, and he's kind of narrating what's going on here. He says,
"Lash together a bunch of drums into a makeshift raft. That'll give the others a chance. Look like it's just you and me, Mikkel. But the way the rig's tilting, it can't last much."
He's interrupted by the giant icebergs crashing into the oil rig. And he's like,
"Good Lord, up there. It got to be smoke blinded, hallucinating. Thor's fighting some green guy now. At all that ice, it can't be real. It can't be real."
And as it crashes all around him, he's like, okay, it's real." And the icebergs have crashed through the gas lines, which has started more fires on the oil rig. He's like,
"I sheared through the gas lines. Come on, Mikkel. No time for anything clever. We gotta get out before a spark."
And apparently there's a spark, and there's a big explosion, and a big foom, and they get cast off the oil rig. And we shift scenes to the Godstorm, who has been reduced to cloud form, in this big black and blue cloud with big eyes, just kind of floating above the scene of the battle. And he's saying,
"I have been a fool. I thought myself mighty, thought myself above gods and mortals both. But Loki tricked me, used me, as if I were nothing more than a beast of burden."
And he's watching as Thor and Loki are fighting each other below.
"Thor's courage and steadfastness know no limit. and yet I saw him as a selfish tyrant. Even the mortals, they brave death to help their fellows, but wait, what do I sense deep in my mind?
And Loki is like, ha, snatch thee from the air like a leaf in the air. And Thor is summoning up a blast of cold air or something, which I don't remember that being one of Thor's powers, but he's using Mjolnir to create like a wind vortex or something, and Loki gets staggered back. Thor saying,
though thou may be as swift as a tornado, Loki, still thou shalt not find the god of thunder easy prey.
I have the power here, Thor. Bluster and rage all thou may choose, but will change nothing. Loki is victorious. Loki is ascendant.
And he's got Thor in a grip, and he's just kind of squeezing him in his hand. And he looks up and he sees the storm is crackling and thundering above him. And Loki's like,
see, even now the sky's mass and dark, and in homage to my greatness, I am the storm now, not thee, nevermore thee. Trickery and guile hath triumphed, and power is my reward. Dost thou feel it, Thor, the power that courses through me, the power that will kill thee? Feel thy life ebb away, and know that despised, cunning Loki hath proven thy better.
It looks like there's some sort of a energy being emitted from Thor's hammer as he's being grasped by Loki here. And he's like,
thou art deluded, Loki, and Thor shall be free.
And there's a big explosion with a cram, and Loki's holding onto his hands like it's in pain. Thor is flying through the air, kind of spiraling through the air as though he's been thrown. And Loki's like,
a temporary freedom at best, brother. It is Loki's power that shall last.
Thou art wrong, Loki. He who lives by honor and loyalty shall always have strength. But he who depends on cunning and guile will only hold power until the truth is discovered. Look around thee. Look to the skies and see what thy treachery doth reap.
What? What madness is?
He looks up and he sees all these storm clouds. It's like the storm dimension clouds is kind of clustering above.
Oh, sly tongue. The storms. The storms of Cragmouth. They come to bow before their new lord. I shall add their power to my own and become even mightier still.
And the storm's like,
no, Loki, thou shalt not.
And they start shooting lightning at Loki. He's being struck by these energy beams or lightning from all directions. You can see it's like almost like boiling the water beneath his feet. And Loki's kind of falling over. And we shift scenes here to one of the oil rig people who's kind of floundering around in the ocean. And I guess it's Mikkel. And he's like, Brom?
He's got to be around here. Last I remember, he was hauling me out of... Oh, God, Brom!
He sees Brom is floating face down in the water, and he's like, he's got to be all right.
But he's lying so still. Help! Help us, someone, please! My friend needs help! Someone! Anyone!
And just at that moment, there's like a gaffer hook reaches out and has grabbed Brom by his overalls and is pulling him aboard the fishing boat. And it turns out to be the old man and Bettina who've come out in the fishing boat to rescue them. And the old man's like,
Victor, are we in time?
I don't know. Bring in the other one and I'll attend to Brom.
And he's like,
he's not breathing. Got to force the water from his lungs. Breathe, Brom, breathe.
Keep trying, Victor, don't stop.
And Brom starts to recover, and the old man is like,
he's breathing.
And Brom looks up and he sees the face of his father, and he's like,
Father?
Yes, my son, I'm here.
Very touching little scene there. We then shift back to the scene of the battle, and the storms are kind of blasting Loki with lightning still. And the storm's like,
didst thou think thou ruled all of us, Loki, merely because thou didst trick one of our number? All thou didst command was the winds and lightnings of this one region. And even so, Thor was able to call to thy cat's paw, the one thou called Godstorm, and he in turn called upon us. And now, little Aesir, thou must pay the price for thy lying, treacherous tongue,
And it looks like they're drawing the energy from Loki. They're calling their power back from him. And you got a little bit of lightning going on around him. And he's like, Loki's like, no, my power, it's gone. And Loki falls to the ocean, only to be rescued by Thor. He's grabbed Loki by the belt. And he's kind of swinging Loki around. It's like, and now, faithless one, it is done. Awake and face thy punishment for what thou hast done. And he's like, Thor, this isn't over. Thou knowest that as well as I. I shall be punished, true. But Odin's sentimental ways will prevent him from being too harsh, and soon I'll be back. Back to plot anew. You'll never be rid of me.
Do not think me unaware of that, Loki. I have long been puzzled by the sight of the Allfather, but it is his way and his right, and I have accepted it. But you are mistaken in one thing, brother. Thy crime is not against Asgard and will not be judged by Odin. This time, thy crime is against the storms. And we see this, storms are crowding around where Loki is being swung around by Thor. And that's the only thing I can describe it as, because Thor, it's not like he's swinging Loki around in midair. It's almost like the clouds are trying to drag Loki up. And Thor has grabbed onto his belt and is trying to keep him from sailing up into the sky. But definitely the storms do not look very happy with Loki. So we then shift scenes again and we are back in the village on shore. And the sky is clearing and the sun is coming down through the clouds. And they're in a little house. And I guess it's the old man's house, father's house. And Brahma's like, I don't believe it. Look at all this stuff. I remember all this. The carvings, the pictures, the books from home. I wonder when he brought it all down here. It used to be in my room, all the stuff he gave me to try to get me interested in fishing and in boats. Like this ship in a bottle, one of the first engine-powered ships from the mid-1800s. Pride of the British fleet, they said. I guess you never forget what you learn when you're 5. And he's holding this in his hand, and it's this kind of impressive-looking pear-shaped bottle with a model ship in it, and it's like the model ship is floating on water, which... It looks a little weird, but okay. It was always the engineering of it that got me, though. How did he build them? How did he get them in the bottles? Like this one, a Viking ship, supposedly from our own family history. He made it himself with those gnarled, scarred hands. He promised to tell me how he made them, but he never did. And there's a shadow behind him, and it turns out to be the old man coming into the room.
Then perhaps it's time I told you, Brahm. Perhaps it's time I told you a lot of things. Things I've kept inside. Bottled up, like that ship. When I was young, I wanted to go to college, become a doctor, a lawyer, someone who worked with his mind, not his hands. But we were fishermen, and I was taught to be one, too. I came to love it. Don't get me wrong, the sea's been good to me. But when you came along with your fascination with machines and buildings and how things worked, well, I worked so hard on you because I wanted to keep the tradition alive. And I called you weak because, well, I didn't like that you were stronger than me, strong enough to resist tradition.
Speaking of tradition, Dad, I lost the heirloom, the stone chip, lost it out there. I never believed in the story, not really, but to see what I saw today and then lose it after all these generations.
Brahm, son, you risked your life to save your men. That's what matters, not some piece of stone, no matter how old it is. How many stories it has. You saved your men, Brahm. They depended on you, and you came through. That's the kind of man you are, and it's all the tradition we need. I'm proud of you, son.
And Brahm is like, oh, Dad. And Bettina comes in. Brahm, Dad, sorry to interrupt, but we've got a visitor, and I don't think you'll mind. And it turns out to be Thor, and looking very Jack Kirby-ish, and I'll talk a little bit about this at the end.
Pardon the intrusion, but I come with a purpose. First, however, I must commend both of thee on thy courage and steadfastness in the aid of others.
And Brahm's like, Thor, it's Thor himself.
Indeed, it is I. I was drawn here by the escape of the creature thy drilling device released, by its escape, and the power of a promise made to a man long since dead. And I am pleased indeed to return to his descendant what I gave him so long ago.
And they see he's holding the rock in his hand. He's like, Dad, in his hand.
Yes, something lost and then found. Something that links father and son. I believe it is yours, my friend.
And we get Thor with a very shadowed, uncharacteristically dark shadowed face. Actually, even a little bit sinister, which is, I don't think, what they really intended. And he's holding out the necklace with the chip of stone on it towards Brom, and ends up hanging it around his neck.
"And now, as I did once before with thy ancestor, I gift you with this fragment of the mystic hammer Mjolnir."
And Brom's like, I'm deeply honored, Thor." And Thor turns about to leave. He's like, "The honor is mine. And now I go, but I leave thee with this. Some things are worth preserving and some are not. Love and honor are worth more than gold, but anger and hatred between family members. Why would anyone, human or god, wish to cling to that?" And Thor goes outside and he starts whirling his hammer around as though he's about ready to fly off. But he's interrupted by this Bettina chick, and she's like,
"Thor, please wait. They've barely spoken in years, but you've never met either of them before. How did you know what to say?"
"I am no stranger to family discord, fair one, but they are lucky to have family who care, and that care found its way to the ear of a god, one that owes their family a debt."
"Then that stone ship? It's for real? I'd heard about it all my life, but I thought it was just a story. I think even Dad thought so, too."
"Is it so hard to imagine, then, that bravery runs in thy family, or that I should be grateful? It is in the strength of mortals, even in the face of their own frailty, that makes them great. And for all my might, all the glory of Asgard, it is men like those, men who epitomize the best Midgard has to offer, that makes me proud to be a god. Should thou or thine need me again, Bettina, I shall be there."
And Thor goes taking off in the sky and leaving everybody kind of watching after him as he leaves. Brahm and the father come out of the house and they're watching him fly off. And Brahm is like,
"Just a speck in the sky now, but quite a guy, eh, Bet? I wonder how much of that hammer of his weighs. I'd like to have tried hefting it."
"I'll bet," says the old man. "So, do you really want to know how I got that ship into a bottle? Assuming, of course, that I can remember after all these years."
"You're on, Dad. Let's go get Mom first. Ah, see, the first mention of their mother. I want to see if Bjorn still makes those great steaks I remember." And so it was.
So we then shift back to the cave again, where we have the old man and the two young boys. It's almost as though he's projecting this story onto the wall like a movie. Though I think that's purely a storytelling device. It's not literally happening. And the old man is saying,
"That Thor didn't live up to the promise he'd made so long ago. The Godstorm rejoined its fellows, and a family was brought together. And what had begun in rage and disaster became a time of healing, a time of peace."
And the kids are like, "And that's it? The end of the story?"
"It is. Did it really? I mean, did it really happen? Thor, a mortal healer, and then a different mortal? The world's so strange and different. It seems hard to believe. Mayhap. But stories are not about whether they are true or not, but about what they mean to us and what we take from them. This last of my stories, it will not happen, if truly it does, until long after your children's children's children are but a memory. So what matters more, if it is factual, or what lessons it holds, and how it shapes our lives?"
And he's kind of pointing his staff at the story stone, and you see the, you know, characters of Brahm and the old man and Bettina there in their kind of Viking drawing sort of way. And Ullr is like,
"Huh, and the tale's true. Then that stone ship is a great power indeed, for it will mark the heroes and likely the leaders of our people. The chief herald is father no sons, but he has a daughter. Ullr, of all the low, dastardly things, you wouldn't do such a thing. You don't even like Dalla." "Oh, so? As if it matters, Limbskull. You're just mad that you didn't think of it first. Besides, Dalla wouldn't give you a second glance. Not when you can't even untangle nets." "And who says I can? I just haven't finished yet." "Ha! You're so easy to gall, Wilf. As if I meant any of that. Still, if you'd prove yourself worthy, do it with your sword, not a fishing net." "Then to the practice grounds, Ullr. I'll show you my worth."
And they go running off, and the old man's left there all alone.
"And so it goes. So it ever goes. To stay a strong people, the Vikings must be courageous and steadfast. But not all threats come from without. A true leader must learn to guard against craftiness and guile, if he wishes to keep his people together. This village will have no worries, though. Their next generation will shape its leader as he needs to be shaped, tempering him to face not merely storms and drought and raiders, but the selfish cunning that can shatter a people no matter their strength.
And he's standing there alone in the cave talking to himself, and there's these birds flying around, and...
Aye, for that is how it is with men. Aye, and with sons to boot.
And the old man at that point bangs his staff on the ground, and he changes with a voom. Not into Thor, but into Odin the Allfather.
As even Odin, Lord of Asgard, hath cause to know, strength and virtue must be opposed, must be challenged and tested, or they will not grow. Rain must fall, or there are no rainbows. Night must come, or we do not come to love the light of day. That is the way of things. And the hero who triumphs over the greatest adversity, it is he who is the mightiest of all.
And Odin summons the Rainbow Bridge, and he goes stalking up, back up the rainbow to Asgard. And we kind of close off the issue with, you know, the picture of the story stone and showing all the characters in the story. And at the very bottom, we see Odin walking up the Rainbow Bridge into Asgard. And that is the end of Thor Godstorm. Okay, so I do have a few comments to make, and as always, we will get to them after this important commercial message.
The dawn of an age. The founding of a family.
You know we haven't done enough research into the effects of cosmic rays.
We've got to take that chance.
Conditions are right tonight. Let's go.
They're penetrating the ship. Our shielding isn't strong enough.
I feel like I'm burning up.
Too heavy. Can't move.
Too heavy.
We're all alive.
I feel so strange.
You're fading away. I can't see you at all anymore.
Look what's happened to you. You are changing.
Oh, Reed, not you too.
What happened to me? To all of us?
I can fly.
We gotta use that power to help mankind, right?
And so was born the Fantastic Four.
For soon the Mole Man will have the entire world in his power.
I am the mightiest living mortal on Earth. And half mankind shall feel that might.
The Fantastic Four. Little do they dream they're the pawns in the hands of Dr. Doom.
The Human Torch will be the Puppet Master's next victim.
You Earthlings can't change the way I can. That means I'm the most powerful person on Earth.
I've been expecting you, for I am the Thinker.
I vow never to return, my lord, until the Fantastic Four are no more and the planet Earth is no more.
You're in the presence of the awesome Ralatots, King of Kings, Master of Men, and Lord of the Seven Suns.
Fool, you're just a muscular freak. Blind or Hulk.
Stop! You must not end on the castle of Diablo.
My journey has ended. This planet shall sustain me until it has been drained of all elemental life. So speak, Galactus.
Flame on!
It's clobbering time!
The Fantastic Four, from the very beginning, witness the origins of a legend. The Fantastic Forecast, ffcast.libsyn.com.
Okay, so just a few comments on this three-issue series in general, and also this third issue in particular. Obviously, this is the third part and the conclusion of this three-parter. And I have a little bit of a problem with some of what they did in this third issue. In the first issue, we had an extremely Kirby-ish style that worked just absolutely wonderfully. Starting with the kids in the fishing village, moving on to Thor's scenes with the Avengers and their fight against the Weathermaker. Love that stuff. And it worked so beautifully in the context of the series that this is what I want the series to be. But as the story has gone on, in the second and the third issue, we find that the artwork is less and less Kirby-ish in each individual issue. I think that that would have been more effective had they rather deliberately chosen to use different styles between the second and the third issue, or between the distinctive chapters of the story. Like you have everything in Asgard be really Kirby-ish, like we had with King Garoder, and then everything that happens on Earth be in, you know, a Steve Rude style, or maybe, you know, homaging a different artist, and make it very clear where these divisions are supposed to take place. In this case, we don't have that. And I find that the artwork in this third issue is, to my mind, it's rather weak, particularly for an artist like Steve Rude, whose work I really like. Now, I don't think that there's a major problem with the story, however. I think the story is utterly consistent. Damn difficult to read out loud, because you have a lot of people interrupting each other, and that's really, really hard to do unless you have two people. This is one of those things that, as an actor, always bothered me when you're doing a table reading for the first time and people are not sure where these interruptions are supposed to come in. It makes it really hard to read out on the show when you have stuff like this. But overall, I think Busiek did a fine job in bringing the story to a conclusion, that the general themes of the story were wrapped up in a satisfying way. But the artwork, I have to say, didn't stand up in this third issue in particular. I don't like a lot of the artwork in this issue. You have some scenes that look fairly Kirby-ish, mostly just the portrayal of Thor. It's almost like he wanted to draw Thor in the Kirby style, but no other character. Because, let's be honest, none of the other characters look like they were in a Kirby-ish style at all. In fact, I think that at the end, where you have Thor coming into the fishing village and confronting Brom and Bettina and the old man, glaringly out of place as looking like a Kirby drawing, while everybody else is a lot more realistic. And I hate to say this, but it just doesn't work for me. The inks by Mike Royer, generally pretty strong. I don't like the fact that they're inconsistent. The inconsistency wouldn't bother me so much if they weren't inconsistent in different ways. I mentioned the almost sinister looking Thor on the last couple pages of the issue, and I think a lot of that effect was brought by the inking. We also have a scene really, really early on where it looks like the old man in the cave with the two kids. It looks like a Mike Mignola drawing. I don't know if that really fits into the style of either Steve Rude or the Kirby-ish style that he's been carrying forward here. And you really don't see it again anywhere else in the issue, so it seems a little bit out of place here. By and large, I find that this third issue is a weaker ending than I would have liked. I would have liked it to have been more consistent. And if you're going to do it Kirby-ish and do it well, just like we did in the first issue. The portrayal of the Godstorm himself actually bothered me a little bit, because I would have expected him to look cool. And this character, it doesn't look cool. I mean, I was talking last issue about Torrent and how he looked like a creature made out of living Kirby Crackle, and it looked awesome. I love the way that character looked. So you would think that the Godstorm, who is giving Torrent his power, is going to look equally awesome. But instead, he looks like this giant striped creature. I mean, he doesn't really look like a living storm. He looks like somebody wearing a striped bodysuit. For some reason, that just really bothers me. Now, I'm sure that there might be some of you out there who probably disagree with what I'm saying, and if you do, please feel free to get in touch with the show. We have an email address, which is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com, and I'm always happy to entertain letters from people, and of course, any mail that I get, I will read out on the show. Okay, so with that, it is time to wrap up this episode. So thanks again very, very much for listening, folks. Now, remember, next week we're going to be covering something else. I'm not quite sure what else yet, but we're going to be covering something different. And then 2 weeks from this episode, we are going to be covering Thor 2, The Dark World. And once again, I would love to have people's feedback. You can send voice files, you can send emails, and you can send those things to radiofreeasgard@gmail.com and be included in our discussion of Thor, The Dark World. And I definitely would look forward to hearing from y'all. All right, so with that, it is time to cross back over the Rainbow Bridge and back to Midgard. And we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard. Radio Free Asgard is copyright Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all related characters are copyright Marvel Comics. Any other characters that appear on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders. We don't own any of this as much as we'd like to. The stories covered on this podcast are for entertainment, educational, and review purposes only. If you like what you've heard on today's program, please tell your friends, drop an iTunes review, or join our Facebook group. Music from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, is copyright Mott Svent and is used with permission because Mott's is simply awesome. Radio Free Asgard should not be downloaded while pregnant, nursing, or operating heavy machinery, and we are not responsible for any damages incurred as the result of this misuse. Side effects may include being lost in a cave and finding a magical hammer, and falling in love with Jane Foster. Once again, thank you for listening to Radio Free Asgard.